Weekly Genetics, a podcast by Sheep Genetics. I'm Chloe Bunter, and today for our 8th episode, we are following the pipeline of our genomics database. Now, this database runs alongside and helps inform ASBVs of the sheep genetics analysis. Genomics is a relatively new and very exciting part of genetic selection within the Australian sheep industry. Being new and complex as most genetic things are, there are of course quite a few questions or concerns or things that breeders just might want to know when they start using genomic products. We are in no way going to be able to cover the entire genomics space in one episode. So every now and then we are going to dedicate a genomics episode that's going to shine a spotlight on a different aspect. Today I thought we would start that with looking at the process and pipeline of getting genomic test information into the analysis itself. Today we are joined by a very special guest who knows that genomic pipeline inside out. She was also there at the start of implementing genomic information into the genetic evaluation. Our guest today is Beck Onslow.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here today, Beck.
Well, thanks for having me, Chloe. Obviously, I've never done a podcast before. Either way.
Great. Love that it's your first time.
Yeah, it could be the start of our multimedia career. Who knows?
Exactly. New career. I was wondering if you could give our listeners a little bit of background about who you are, what your role is, and what roles you've had across industry, because your job is quite integral to the sheep genetics database, but a lot of people might not know exactly where you fit in.
Oh, okay. Yep. Thanks, Chloe. So I grew up on a sheep and cattle place at Walcott, and my parents had two studs. They had a Merino and a Pole Hereford stud. But Dad was always super interested in genetics, so we heard a lot about that growing up. We probably didn't know what it meant, but he talked about it a lot, so it would have always been in the back of my mind. So it's probably a big part of the reason I went to UNE and did rural science, same as we all did. And I was lucky to study under Julius genetics there, and obviously he had a massive role in the start of sheep genomics in Australia, so yeah. That was great. Then I finished uni and I didn't do anything genetic. I went and worked for the Japanese government in their Department of Agriculture. So, yeah, that was a pretty cool, pretty fun job, but I wasn't Japanese, so I wasn't going anywhere. So I then went and got a job with Meat and Livestock Australia in live exports. And then I had a family, and then I saw a really cool looking job the Sheep CRC had for sheep genomics position. And I was lucky enough to apply for that and get that job. So that was right at the start of the commercialization of genomics. Mm-hmm. So it was just really great job. My role was to work with breeders to help them navigate the pipeline. And basically we all learned as we went. But it was just really fun to be involved in that, because obviously it was a new industry, there was a lot to learn, I was learning a lot and the breeders were learning a lot, so we were all quite excited about it, I think. And when I look at how things have improved over that time, in those days I reckon the turnaround time would have been 4 months, something like that. Yeah, so now it's probably, I don't know, more like 1 month probably.
Yep.
So there's just been so many improvements over that time, and you know, we've all worked together to get there. So it's really great. And I'm so grateful that I saw that job and applied for it. Anyway, obviously the Sheep CRC wound up. So then I went and worked for Neogen, and I was their regional manager for sheep. And then in 2020, I commenced at AgBoo, which is where I am now. So when I first started, there were new companies entering that space, the sheep genomics space. So I was brought on to help them navigate the sheep genetics AgBoo system. And now obviously they're all old hands, so they don't need me as much. So now I'm mainly doing the parentage analysis, but I'm also working with the labs and you guys obviously a lot, just to keep these genotypes flowing through and getting results to breeders. Yeah, so that's basically what I've been doing for the last 12 years or so.
And that genomics pipeline that you mentioned, you were sort of there for the beginning of and helping people go through that process. That is what we are discussing today on this episode, is flowing through the genomics pipeline. And you are right, we are in constant contact. We have weekly meetings. If I'm not emailing or calling you daily, it's a rarity. So it is very integral to what we do here at Sheep Genetics. I was wondering if you could give us a brief snapshot on what the main genomic products are that we do use within the Sheep Genetics database.
Yeah, so we've got three main commercial products. So we've got the 50K, which is also sometimes called the genomics test, and mm-hmm. it's actually more like 60K now. But anyway, that's the test that breeders would use to include genomic information into their breeding values. And we've got the flock profile test, and that's a great product for commercial breeders. So they can test just 20 animals, so it's not many, and you can just see where your animals sit against the sheep genetics database. So that's a great test for commercial breeders. And then we've got the parentage test, and that's obviously used to find the sire or dam or both of progeny. And I guess one important thing to say about that, our test is an assignment test. Mm-hmm. It's not a discovery. So we need a sire and dam list of genotype parents to run against the progeny. And we do that just basically so we can get the results back in a reasonable time. So a discovery service would be more like where the animals matched against all the animals in the genotype. But, you know, there's masses of genotypes. I think we've got 1 million in the database. So that's just not going to be that quick to get the results back.
No, exactly. And as you say, a discovery would take quite a lot of computing power and time. I think we hit over 500,000 in merinos alone at some point in this year. With the assignment for parentage, do you have any tips or tricks that you could give breeders to make sure they do have all the information that you're going to need to make that process a bit smoother?
Yeah, so I guess the most important thing is to provide all the information about that animal to your lab, and it might depend a bit on the test type. So if you're new, really best thing is give Chloe a call and your genotyping provider and find out what they need from the start. And I guess the big thing most people say is, oh, I didn't get all my allocation. So that's probably the most common question we get. So I reckon first thing is just take a look at the parents. So some of them might say no usable genotype, so that means that animal has not been used in the analysis, so you need to work out why. So it's either it hasn't been genotyped, or we've got the wrong ID on it, mm-hmm. Or it failed originally when it genotyped. So go and have a look at that and fix up the IDs if there's a problem, and then it can be rerun. And I reckon the other really common thing is people just miss a group out of the parents. So check your parents again. Like often just the backups are missed out, or the AI group or something.
Yeah, yeah, something that is easily overlooked but can have quite an impact on how long it's going to take for your genomic test to come back.
Yeah, that's right. Because, you know, all these reruns obviously take a bit of time. So if you're trying to hit a run and you've got to, you know, you do a run and then we've got to rerun it, you know, there's a few days there, like it's not sort of instantaneous. I mean, having said that, most parentage runs really take 20 minutes to an hour or something mm-hmm. for the analysis. And then there's the checking time as well.
Yeah. If we take a step back and go from on-farm, breeder's got TSU in hand, about to send it off, what would you say are the main steps from that TSU making it all the way into the genomics database for the sheep genetics analyses?
Yeah, so there's a lot of people involved and mm-hmm. quite a few steps. So, and I actually like that aspect of this, that we're all sort of working together. Like yeah. there's the breeder, the service provider, the lab, you guys and AgBoo. So we all have to do our bit, and obviously starts with the breeder taking yep. that TSU. And for the breeder, as I just said before, if you just get all the information right at the start, everything flows through and matches up across the databases, and then we don't have problems. It's when you have to go back and fix things, there's manual interventions then, you know, it's mm-hmm. takes time and there's problems. So, you know, breeder takes the TSU, sends it to the lab with hopefully all the right information. The lab sends us the data. And if you think about it, so each genotype's for the genomics test, 60,000 SNPs. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, basically the report looks like 60,000 sort of SNPs in rows and then calls across that. So it's a massive amount of data. That's just one genotype. So if you have 2,000 animals in order, it's big. So we load that into our database, but it actually doesn't take very long given the size. So an average size probably takes, I don't know, 10 to 20 minutes to load, something like that. So then we've got that in our database and we run a few checks. So we'll make sure the order matches the data that was returned. And we do some QC. So we look at core rates and heterozygosity. Mm-hmm. And some animals might fail on those. So then you get that big failed in your results report. And obviously we can't use that animal. So mm-hmm. that has to be regenotyped. Then we have to impute the data. So that fills in the missing SNPs for each product and then sort of integrates them together. So that also takes a bit of time, maybe an hour. But while that's running, we can run the parentage analysis. And I think I said before that takes 20 minutes to an hour from normal yeah. order. But say you've got an order of 3,000 progeny with 3,500 parents, that's going to take more like 5 to 6 hours. So it's pretty dependent on the size. And then we check the parentage. So we open a massive page of diagnostics, and the parentage is based on maximum likelihood. And we also look at opposing homozygotes. But we just run filters across it so we can pretty quickly see if there's something that looks weird. So if it doesn't look weird, then it really only takes, I don't know, 10 minutes, 5 to 15 minutes probably, just depends. But if there is something a bit strange, we'll have to drill down into that animal and look at sibling correlations and things. So that's why sometimes it takes a bit longer. Like if there's really close relationships or it's a massive order, it will take a bit more time. So then we send the parentage back to the genotyping lab. Yep. And they send it to the breeder. So then we've got our genotypes in our database, we've done the parentage, then we have to release them to mm-hmm. Ovid to make it all available for sheep genetics. And that step takes about half an hour as well. So there's sort of those steps and they all take a bit of time. So our cutoff for the labs is actually 48 hours before the sheep genetics cutoff. So we need the genotypes 48 hours prior to make sure we can get everything done in time and fix any problems. So I don't know if many people realise that.
No, I think that is a very underknown fact, is the fact that the genotypes do need to have been finished at least, as you said, 24 hours before the breeder cutoff to submit files is.
Yeah.
So that's why we do often say to have a bit of runtime up your sleeve if you need your genotypes back by certain selection decisions or sales or things like that. As you said, all those steps that you've just listed, that's just for one order and you're getting...
Yeah.
All these different orders from all these different breeds and flocks all the time. I want to circle back to a very interesting word that you said, which is heterozygosity. I think that would be my new fun word of the day. Do you mind just explaining that a little bit more for our listeners?
It's a weird one. It pops up now and then, and it's kind of like there's been contamination, really. So it looks like there's sort of different DNA in there, basically. Mm-hmm. And sometimes just... we've had animals that have been retested a number of times. They're still showing that. So then we tell them it's obviously a goat or something, or a goat mixed with a sheep.
So is that something like the TSU gun not being cleaned properly, or another sample might have gotten into the tube?
Yeah, and it's hard to see how that could happen, but it's just what we're seeing.
Yeah. There's yeah. always weird and wonderful ways for things yes. to go wrong, and it's good
right.
that you've got all these QC checks in place to make sure that all data going through is as accurate as it can be.
Yeah.
When it comes talking about other issues that you might come across,
yeah.
Are there certain themes or certain issues that you do see occur more often than others when it does come? You've mentioned making sure that you haven't missed a sire group, but is there anything else that you'd like to sort of just put out there to really keep an eye out for when you're doing your genotyping?
I guess the ID thing, like mm-hmm. as you and I know, we get a lot of tag changes.
Yes.
And it's the bane of our existence.
It is, yep. It's definitely a buzzword.
So last October, I did have a look at this, we did 960 tag changes.
960 in 1 month.
Yeah, in 1 month. So it just causes so many problems because when you think about it, there's five potential places that tag has to be changed. So there's breeder, service provider, genotyping lab, AGBU and sheep genetics. So it's sort of easy to see that one of those doesn't get changed and then there's a problem. Like even in our AGBU database, there's three places we have mm-hmm. to change them. So we have to change them in the screen. We have to line up our internal databases and we have to push that through to Ovis and SG. And yep. because as the run's going, the genotypes are accessed, we can't do it while the run's going. So obviously, because if the run's going, we change it and that reaches into the genotypes, everything's just going to blow up. So we have that real time squeeze. And if there's a lot of tag changes and there's not much time between runs, it probably can affect the run timing. So yeah, if people can just, a really common one is dragging the flock herd down.
Yes. Classic Excel move. Yep.
Yes. I mean, I've done it myself, obviously.
Yep, same.
But and that can create problems for other people because you might create an animal for them, for their flock. So, and I guess a quick check is you could just check the length of the SGRD. That's pretty easy to do in Excel. Check the flock code. And I know, you know, you see what you expect to see.
Yes.
When you're looking at data all day. So I totally understand how it happens. And you know, I guess other things like tags fall out, I think we hope people might be able to manage them in software instead of changing the tag. But obviously things happen and tags will need to be changed. But there's a lot of knock-on effect at this end. That's I guess, the main message. And even further down the track, I'm trying to sort of parentage at the moment where the parents have been entered under three different flock codes. One was wrong and no one knows, you know, they're across multiple orders. It gets really messy to try and match everything up again.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, and as you mentioned, it is in so many places that it has to be changed. We have previously had quite a few issues where data's gone missing because it was attached to the old ID. And when the new ID came through with the genotype, it's created a whole new animal. So a flock actually had, according to our records, double the amount of animals that were actually on the farm, which can lead to all sorts of issues with genetic trends and SPVs and size and things like that. So a really, really good tip is to make sure as best as you can that you are double checking those lists for these common issues before you send them off to try and avoid retags as much as you can. There's another common term for us that I don't think is very widely used within industry, but does have quite an impact, and that's what we call an orphan genotype. Are you able to give us a little bit more information about those?
Yeah, so an orphan genotype is an animal with a genotype that doesn't have a matching ID in sheep genetics. So it's just sort of orphaning out in space, not attached to anything and not being used in anything and just sort of hanging there. So I guess when it's something that we used to look at a lot more, but now sheep genetics does. And it's, you've paid for that genotype, but it's not doing anything for you, I guess, is the problem there.
And I guess with what I've noticed in working with flocks on these, there are sort of some common ways that an orphan genotype comes about that you can be aware of. The first is, as you said, the animal doesn't exist in sheep genetics, so they might not have just submitted that eardrop file yet. But for all your older ones or things like that, it's often when a retag has occurred and the genotype hasn't come across properly or the data hasn't come across properly or the new ID hasn't been submitted. We had a couple of cases where they thought they'd submitted the ID, but they hadn't actually exported the file to sheep genetics yet, and it was 2 weeks before their sale. So as Beck said, sheep genetics is looking at these lists more often, trying to cut down on the numbers of genotypes that, as you said, Beck, have been paid for. They're just not being used yet.
Yeah, and I guess tag changes again, major issue, as you said.
Yeah. You started off in the CRC, as you said, working through that pipeline. We've just had a very good and in-depth discussion, in my opinion, of how that flows through from breeder to the sheep genetics database. In your role and across the couple of different roles you've had in industry, has anything surprised you, or is there something that just continues to amaze you when it comes to the genomics database or breeding or genetics in general?
Oh, just there's a lot of commitment in this industry, and I just feel really lucky that I was there at the start of the sheep genomics journey. Like it was so great to be involved with something that grew so quickly and that people, you know, I love the skepticism of farmers, and I love that at the start they're like, yeah, what's this? And then, you know, they jump on board, and lots of them, you know, lots of breeders intuitively just knew how this would work for them. And obviously they've kept coming back because the growth has been massive. So I feel really lucky that I was involved in that. And the commitment of breeders is amazing. You know, I just love the ones that chase down to get 100% allocation for parentage. Like they won't accept anything less. And it's a lot of work for them. But the other cool thing is just the way we all work together. Like there's you guys, breeder, service provider, genotyping lab, and ag boot, and we all work together, and I really enjoy being part of that sort of big group of different people trying just to get the best outcome for the breeders.
Yeah, no, it is a bit of a close-knit community when it does come to genetics, especially in the sheep space.
Yeah,
genomics is seen as cool, new, exciting. It's people want to get involved. They want to be able to get the most of it as they can. From those early adopters right through to it now being quite a the mass populations are getting involved with it now. Have you seen any changes in opinions or anything that's come about from industry when it comes to genomics specifically?
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the early days, I was working directly with breeders and trying to help them through the system. And people, if anyone heard about it, they'd obviously ring me. And so we just had all those early conversations. And as I said, I love skepticism. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time obviously working through that. And I think now, like, the sort of common acceptance, it's just part of what you're doing. It's that's changed a lot. And I think in the early days, people found it quite difficult to navigate, but now it's just, you know, part of what they're doing, and it's not, you know, they've realized it's not that hard. It's really, at the end of the day, they're just taking a sample and still a hassle getting the ID side and the paperwork, I guess. I know that's still a bit of a hassle, but just that acceptance and excitement, I think. And people are really on board with the technology. And, I mean, I don't see breeders as much anymore, but you would. So you would see that. And I think that people like that it's they've got a cutting edge technology to use in their breeding program.
Yeah, absolutely. The way genomics has evolved is it really is just the cherry on top of all the foundations and the phenotyping and the pedigree collection and the data collection that you're taking to take your flock just to the next level, which is really exciting.
Yeah. And I just think, if that message got out a bit more, maybe in city areas, because I think maybe sometimes the perception of farming is, I don't know, the poor farmers, they're all dying in drought. But really, these farmers are doing such amazing things, and maybe people need to know that.
The innovation that's occurring is just incredible and blows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'd have to say it's one of the, it's probably one of the most innovative industries these days with everything, like, GPS technology, the whole lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights into following along with the genomics pipeline. I've really appreciated all your answering questions and comments today.
Oh, thanks, Chloe. And, I always really enjoy working with Sheep Genetics, and you're a great team. And, it's been great. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.